Hello, and welcome to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies.
Hello, and welcome to this latest podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies. This edition is being brought to you by the GAS programme, and my name is James Henderson, the Head of GAS Research at OIES. With me today, I have my colleague and Senior Research Fellow, Katya Yefimova. And our conversation today is going to be based on her recent paper, EU Solidarity at a Time of Crisis, Even with a Will, the Way Still Looks Difficult, which was published in February 2023. Katya, welcome to the podcast.
Hello, good to be here.
Great. Well, look, Katya, we're talking today on April the 5th. And as we sit here now, it's pretty clear that the EU has got through the winter of 2022-23 pretty unscathed. However, it may not be equally lucky in the next winter, 23-24. So what are the main factors that could lead to gas shortages and which member states would be most affected and why?
Yes, indeed. So about, you know, half a year ago, there were some fears that our current winter could be problematic, but luckily for Europe, it went through it relatively unscathed. And there's no guarantee, however, of course, that the next winter would be equally favourable, and all the combination of factors that helped during this winter would be the same. So the factors are, as always, of course, first of all, the weather. The current winter was relatively mild. There's no guarantee the next winter is going to be the same. Another big factor is what happens with Chinese demand for gas, because if it's growing strongly the second half of this year, it could take much-needed gas away from Europe. That's complicating European gas balance. Another factor, now that gas prices came down quite significantly from their historic highs just months ago, again, it remains to be seen how demand behaves in Europe, whether we'll see demand sort of going up again. And of course, an ever-present factor, we don't know what might happen with Russian gas supplies into Europe. They still continue, of course, at much reduced levels. But if those were to be lost completely in the course of this year, for whatever reason, that, of course, would complicate the picture. And the region most affected in such eventuality would be Central and Eastern European region, which includes Czechia, Slovakia, Austria, Hungary, and Germany. And why it would be most affected? Because if Russian supplies were to be lost, for example, is the infrastructure and capacity constraints through which LNG and non-Russian pipeline supplies could be brought in when and if needed. So this region is affected still.
Okay, so I mean, I kind of, in response to that, I guess in 2022, the EU has adopted new legislation and it's stipulated various energy solidarity measures in addition to the existing security of supply regulation. So what are the main pieces of this legislation and why have they been adopted?
Well, indeed, because there was this nervousness on part of Europe about upcoming winters, the EU legislation, which envisages various solidarity measures, has been expanded. As you said, of course, there is security of supply regulation in place, adopted in 2017, which has this solidarity sharing obligation. But this was never designed to compensate for a complete loss, for example, of all Russian gas supplies to Europe. It was sort of a more localized losses of supply. So there was this feeling on part of the EU that more measures would have to be put in place in case they need to be invoked. And the two key pieces on legislation which complement security of supply regulation is the so-called gas demand reduction regulation adopted in August 2022, so last summer, which stipulates voluntary demand reduction and under certain conditions mandatory gas demand reduction. And also enhancing security, enhancing regulation, which effectively amends and adjusts some key provisions of security of of supply 2017 regulation, making a stronger emphasis on this sharing obligation.
Okay, so let's take a step back then, if we may, before we sort of get into the detail. What is energy solidarity and how is it defined by EU law?
Well, energy solidarity for a long time had remained sort of a woolly concept, and it was widely understood by, you know, both law community and gas community sort of as a political guidance rather than a firm legal principle that would create rights and obligations on part of member states and the Commission. This changed. It has changed some time ago, very recently, with the judgment which was passed by the European Court of Justice in the Opal case, where a judgment effectively stated that energy solidarity is a justifiable legal principle, which means that it creates rights and obligations in respect of solidarity between member states and the European Commission. It, however, you know, did not provide much of a guidance how exactly this principle were to be implemented, how the interests of different member states were to be balanced in exercising the implementation of this principle. So a lot of this remained unanswered, but the key change, and that kind of sea change, really that from the time when this judgment was passed, energy solidarity is a justifiable legal principle, and that means that the solidarity measures which are envisaged in security of supply regulation, in enhancing solidarity regulation, and in the gas demand reduction regulation, all of these measures would have to be implemented because now the highest court in the EU ruled solidarity being a firm justifiable legal principle. And it remains to be seen how this is to be done. And another key thing to stress, I guess, is that those solidarity measures stipulated in those pieces of legislation, they refer and concern not just measures aimed at measures to be implemented during a crisis, during measures aimed at handling the actual crisis. They also concern solidarity measures in the run-up to the crisis, so effectively preventive measures at all. So energy solidarity have to be implemented both in respect of preventing preventive action and also an action taken during a crisis.
And so what would actually happen? I mean, what are the most important measures that the legislation stipulates? What actually in practical terms would occur?
So the key solidarity obligation is contained in security of supply regulation, which exists from 2017. And this obligation effectively stipulates a reduction of gas supply to all customers other than solidarity protected customers in one member state to enable another member state to which this member state is connected either directly or across a third non-EU country and which declared a national emergency and requested solidarity measure to supply solidarity protected customers if it cannot do so on its own. So effectively, one member state would have to reduce supplies or cut off supplies to all its customers, apart from solidarity protected customers, to help a neighboring, connected directly or indirectly member state to cover demand of its own solidarity protected customers. So solidarity protected customers, it's effectively households. It's also district heating installations which provide gas supplies to households and to essential social services, basically services, also all essential services. And that excludes administration and education, but includes all others. And also supplies to essential services, again, excluding administration and educational services. what are, as I mentioned, enhancing solidarity regulation did to this obligation, which is contained in Security Supply Regulation. It amended it in a way that it extended solidarity protection not only on solidarity protected customers, those categories which I've listed, but also on critical gas volumes for ensuring electricity security of supply as well. And another novelty which it has added, it also extended this obligation to help to share supplies not only on member states which are connected, a member state which has requested this solidarity measure, but also on those member states which have an LNG terminal, they have LNG import capacity, even those member states which may not be connected to a requesting member state, either directly or via a non-EU country.
Okay, let me just ask another question. So the regulation, if I'm correct, obliged member states to sort of sign solidarity agreements, bilateral or multilateral, but what are these agreements about? How many have been concluded? And you know, what's your conclusion from actually progress that's been made on those agreements?
Security of Supply Regulation from 2017 obliged member states to conclude such solidarity agreements with each other, bilateral solidarity agreements, by December 2018, so some time ago. And those agreements were meant to specify financial, legal, and technical arrangements which determine how exactly this sharing of gas in an emergency will take place. So effectively, these agreements contain all the technicalities which allow for this sharing obligation to be implemented in practice and in a crisis, in an emergency situation. So it's pretty key role that those agreements are meant to play. And of course, it's very telling that even by now, very few agreements have been concluded. The last time I've checked, quite recently, about 6 agreements only. For example, Germany concluded an agreement with Denmark and Austria, and there are also some others. But many countries in the sub-region, in the Central Eastern European sub-region, which I've mentioned, would be most affected in the event of a crisis. For example, Czechia or Slovakia or Hungary, they don't have any solidarity agreements concluded either with each other or with their neighbors. Also, for example, Germany doesn't have agreements concluded with, say, France or Belgium or the Netherlands, for example. So the progress has been very, very slow, and that means clearly that member states have faced difficulties in, you know, agreeing those details, how exactly this sharing were to be work in a crisis.
So does that mean that if there were a crisis next winter without solidarity agreements, that the solidarity, security of supply regulation and solidarity just wouldn't work? Or are there automatic things that would happen?
Well, effectively, the European Commission, which, you know, clearly has been pushing member states to conclude such agreements, but as you see, the progress has been limited. What it did, it effectively proposed to include so-called, you know, model default clauses on solidarity in as part of enhancing solidarity regulation, which is now in force, which was adopted in December last year. And those clauses would apply in the event of an emergency if by that time member states have not concluded their own bilateral agreements with each other. So effectively, those are being imposed on them, and the conditions, financial, legal, technical, which are stipulated in those default clauses would apply. Of course, that's partly a solution, but clearly that is a second best solution. Why? Because, you know, those clauses are imposed, whereas if member states were able to agree their own agreements, there is a highly likelihood, that they would be, implement them in the event of a crisis, because they bilaterally agreed what is suitable for them, rather than these conditions are now being imposed on them. So to me, it's a solution. It's a second best, because obviously it had to be done, because those bilateral agreements were missing en masse. But ideally, of course, it's better if member states conclude such bilateral agreements themselves. Of course, they still have time to do so again, because ahead of the next winter, we may see more solidarity agreements, bilateral solidarity agreements, being signed between member states, you know, voluntarily, if they don't want to be to live by those model clauses.
Okay. The other thing that the European Union did was to, I hesitate to say impose, but it certainly called for voluntary gas demand reductions. And obviously you've mentioned the gas demand reduction regulation. So perhaps you could speak a little bit about that, and also the purpose of the 15% demand reduction requirement, and I guess whether it's still relevant. I mean, we saw demand falling by 15% last year. What's the relevance of the ongoing requirement?
Yeah, so the gas demand reduction regulation is this third piece in this three-piece legislation row, which provides for voluntary or under certain conditions mandatory gas demand reduction, which essentially is also a solidarity measure, because what it does, it would allow to spread any potential gas shortage more evenly across the EU, which is why I consider it in my paper also as a solidarity measure. You're right, member states reduced their consumption by about 15%, if not more. So that's exactly what the gas demand reduction regulation prescribed as a voluntary measure. So member states reduced their so-called winter consumption from August to March by 15% compared to August to March consumption over the last 5-year period. So this has happened on its own, largely because of high prices, had a dampening impact specifically on industrial demand. And of course, there is warm weather, which helped to reduce consumption in residential sector. So what could happen next year, again, as we've started this conversation, next winter could be more difficult. And of course, is understanding of this in the Commission. So the Commission proposed prolonging this regulation for another year, because it would come to expiry at the end of March this year. So now it's from 1st of April of this year. It's been prolonged for another year. Very similar. There's some tweaks and adjustments have been made to it, but largely it's the same voluntary reduction by 15%, or under certain circumstances, it's 15% mandatory, with again the mechanism of exemptions. So member states could apply for exemptions, either full or partial. That also remained in the renewed regulation. But the idea remains the same. Again, if demand, say, kind of goes again on a growing trajectory, you know, that might come to be handy. So if I mentioned, probably there's a mechanism in this regulation which stipulates effectively when mandatory gas reduction kicks in. So it's the council which has the power, if it's a qualified majority vote between between all member states in support of this, to announce a union alert. And if a union alert is announced, then this mandatory gas demand reduction 15% is being triggered, and that applies to all member states. For the council to have such a vote, it's the Commission would have to propose to put it on a vote, and the Commission has a discretion when to do so. So there are kind of two ways. One is if at least five member states have declared a national alert. So in that case, the Commission simply is obliged to offer the Council to vote on this mandatory reduction trigger. Or otherwise, if the Commission believes for whatever reason there is a risk of severe gas shortage, for example, or exceptionally high gas demand, which would result in significant deterioration of supply situation potentially. And in that case, Commission can also can propose to the Council to declare this union alert. And that, if things were to come to that, clearly that would be a very big deal. It would be quite difficult to implement.
So yeah, on that, I mean, the clearly, you know, if this requirement is imposed, there are going to be quite a lot of debates, one would imagine, between countries about who should cut what where for whom. You can imagine Polish authorities not being too happy cutting demand to a Polish industrial conglomerate in preference to sending gas to Germany, and you know, vice versa perhaps as well. Or so what kind of difficulties do you see being associated with the implementation of these solidarity regulations, and how do you think the EU would resolve them?
Yeah, you just provided a flavour of potential difficulties in store. Of course, it is always a sensitive issue politically and economically, which sectors and which enterprises within a sector would have to see their supplies reduced or potentially cut off completely. So there could be disagreements within any given member states, between different sectors, between each sector within one member state. There, of course, also, as you said, there could be difficulties on regional cooperation, on regional cohesion, if there's sort of cross-border supply chains are involved. And, of course, without singling out in any member state, you know, that it's not difficult to imagine that there would be difficult conversations to be had, which consumers have priority, which are considered to be more critical. For example, you know, one group of consumers or enterprises could be considered more critical. On the other hand, there are also some industries to which, if you cut supplies completely, you might not be able to restore this production line at all. For example, so there would have to be trade-offs to be made by member state level and within wider regions between neighboring member states. And of course, as I mentioned before, kind of coming back to this energy solidarity principle, because all member states would have to comply with this mandatory gas demand reduction requirement if it's triggered, but how exactly to implement it, it's very much sort of widely open, and there is, of course, a danger if there's too much, you know, disagreement during the crisis and no measures are taken. So the crisis kind of drags on and exacerbated before the measures could have been taken earlier, and the crisis would be less serious. And that's sort of reflected, this potential for this is reflected in the fact that security supply regulation also obliged member states to conclude their preventive action plans, but also emergency plans. Effectively, those plans outline the measures to be taken by member states to prevent crisis and also how to deal with any crisis. And they're supposed to outline various measures how to deal with that. And the Commission issued several quite critical opinions on most of member states' plans, preventive action and emergency, that the measures specified are not specific enough. It's not quite clear who does what. And above all, it's not quite clear how those measures are helping to alleviate the crisis. So it requested member states to redraw the plans, to submit updated plans, and specifically to show how this solidarity obligation, sharing obligation, and also gas demand reduction obligation, how they would be implemented in practice. So that's sort of trying to at least outline on the paper how it will be done in case it will be needed. And given that it's quite proven quite difficult to agree to put it even on paper, of course, there's a potential that it could be difficult during crisis.
Yeah, so I mean, it's clear then that, you know, why your paper is called EU Solidarity at a Time of Crisis, even with a will, the way still looks difficult. I mean, it sounds more than difficult, to be honest. I mean, I think if one's being brutally honest, and just to conclude, is this going to work in a crisis? If we do have a cold winter, is this going to work, or is there not enough agreement and not enough actual plan for implementation to make this work if there's a genuine crisis next winter?
My view that if all of these measures envisaged in those pieces of legislation are agreed upon and implemented, it would not be able completely to, you know, resolve the crisis, completely to remove this vulnerability of this Central and East European sub-region. But they could alleviate it to a significant degree, at least, I think, in relation to solidarity obligation under security of supply regulation, which effectively ring fences and guarantees supplies, at least to solidarity-protected customers, because there would be enough supply and enough infrastructure to at least provide supplies to those categories of consumers, solidarity-protected customers, and also these critical volumes for security of electricity supplies. That's what enhancing solidarity regulation also requires to do in respect of sharing. So that's actually the key piece of legislation. For it to work, again, there should be effort made to conclude more solidarity agreements between member states, despite the fact that there are default agreements now present in legislation. Of course, it now also gives time to specify further preventive action and emergency plans in respect of how exactly this sharing is going to be done, how it's going to be paid for, etc. So that's the key piece. And that has the highest potential of helping to alleviate the crisis. Gas demand reduction regulation also could help, but I would see its role as secondary compared to security of supply obligation. Why? Because, for example, if certain member states reduce their gas demand, given limited capacity, given infrastructure constraints, which would allow to push this saved gas into the most affected Central and East European region, that wouldn't do much help. Say if Spain reduces its gas demand very much, it's not going to have to help, for example, Austria and so forth. So that would help, you know, gas demand reduction to a degree would help. But because the most affected Central and East European regions demand, for example, in 2021 was significantly above capacity infrastructure leading into that region, you know, that's a discrepancy. This discrepancy hasn't disappeared. Like, for example, demand was about 130 BCM and infrastructure allowing to push non-Russian gas would be just 90. So this clear discrepancy. The point to mention, which I haven't yet, is that, of course, Germany now put additional LNG terminals, FSRUs, in place. This sort of, you know, enabling higher flows into this potentially most affected region. So now Germany would be sort of a gatekeeper for this additional LNG imports in the region. And again, it would also play a crucial role in how Germany, for example, implements its solidarity obligation and sharing during the crisis if it were to come to this.
Okay, great. Well, look, thank you for that and for those insights in your paper. And I just highlight it's on our website called EU Solidarity at a Time of Crisis, even with a will, the way still looks difficult. I think obviously we'll be watching out next winter to see whether the weather's cold and whether we need to implement these agreements or not and whether enough has been done between now and then. But for the time being, Katja, thank you very much indeed for your thoughts. Thank you to all our listeners for tuning in. Please do take care of yourselves and goodbye.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies. You can find other podcasts, as well as our written research, on our website at www.oxfordenergy.org. If you would like more details about our energy transition, gas, oil, electricity or China research programmes, then please contact us at information@oxfordenergy.org.